One of my favorite Rumi poems is called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. She may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each one has been sent as a guide from beyond. You know, in one way, one of the fundamental functions of our practice is to be present with the difficult feelings that come up in life. And there's the day-to-day variety we experience all the time. We're late to an appointment, our car needs fixing, we have an argument with a family member, we miss our deadline. Stuff like that happens all the time. And then there's just the momentary stuff we see all the time, the mind moving all the time to be in a different moment, wanting a different experience. In a way, if none of this happened, we wouldn't even need practice. I mean, this is where the rubber hits the road, isn't it? And we have tools in the Vipassana practice in our toolbox for attending to these things when they come up. For example, we have the RAP, the RAP practice. It's acronym for R is recognizing that you're experiencing something difficult, because sometimes we can skip right over that without realizing that we're irritated or worried or bugged about something. The A is attending, which means to not move away from it, to stay, to notice it's there and offer it your attention. And then the P is to do it with presence, you know, just to keep it company. And there are variations of these letters depending on different teachers, different centers in the country, but they're kind of the same idea. It gives you a sense of realizing it's there and attending. When these things come up in practice, our basic tool, we call it holding and polishing. You know, you have an insistent thought that comes up over and over again in practice, or some insistent visitor keeps coming, right? It's like the intrusive thought, because there's some difficult emotion that's happening. And in practice, we then stop our noticing things come up, and we just focus in right on this object, and we hold it. If that gets intense, another practice that's in the toolbox is called Tonglen practice, giving and receiving. And that's where you first find the center in yourself that feels clear, that knows clarity, that knows wisdom and peace, and you balance that with whatever difficulty is there, giving and receiving. I'm not going to go into these practices this morning because they're experiential. If it would be helpful for you to spend the morning actually doing these things, because we do these in our classes, let me know and we'll set up a Saturday morning to go through them. But I'm just putting them out as a survey of what's there. And all of these practices have something in common, which is our default mechanism when something difficult comes up is we push away from it, right? I mean, first there's that feeling of dreading you. Oh, I hate feeling this, right? And then the mind finds a million ways to try to move away and find a more comfortable place. So join with me. What are some of the ways we push away difficult emotions when we have them? What do you guys do?
Procrastinate.
Yes, procrastinate. Yes. What else?
Get busy.
Get busy. That's right. What else?
Entertainment,
right? Turn on the TV, check your phone, get on the phone, right. What else?
Misdirect.
Say more about that, Meg.
Take the energy of that and put it towards something else.
Like cleaning your closet or
That or yelling at someone.
Right, that's right. We acted out. We try to move that energy out. We slam doors. We clean closets. We raise our voices, right? It's trying to move that energy out because it's so uncomfortable. What else do we do?
Drugs.
Drugs, yes, of all descriptions. Here's one of my favorite ones. I numb out. Just not going to feel that one. Oh, no. We're inside, right? We numb out, we deny, we repress. What else?
I think sometimes moving to a place where you're starting to make a case for why you're feeling that is
right.
Someone else's fault.
Right. We have this, that's really beautiful because we have a mental outflow that begins. It's why our minds won't stop when it comes up in practice. We justify, we complain, we try to make our understand, I'm really right about this. So our mind will try to find a more comfortable place that it's more to our advantage. We look good, right? So our mind tries to justify in some way. So all of these are moving away from our emotion. And it turns out all the Dharma practices, it sounds counterintuitive, but the basic instruction of all these, the wrap, the holding and polishing the tonglen, are to move back toward it, to come back toward our feeling and be present with them. So that's kind of our garden variety. I'll call those the everyday things that come up. But once in a while in life, something hits you with such force between the eyes that it doesn't go in just a day or a couple of sittings. You know, we've all experienced loss, right? It might be a death in the family. It might be the loss of a relationship or of a job or loss of health. You get a diagnosis. There are things that hit us between the eyes and they kind of take over our lives. Anybody not had that happen? Good, I'm talking to the choir. It certainly happened to me sometimes it can happen really quickly. You're just kind of walking around and then something happens and life is different. And those are the ones I kind of want to talk about today. So it's true that what we do for little things is the same what we do for big things. The same practices are true. We have to move toward them, not away from them. But there's some extra stuff. And what you can count on is the small mind wants to move away. You can count on yourself to have that 10-foot pole reaction, like, oh God, I don't want this. So rather than seeing that as your enemy, just count on that being present. It's part of it. So just go, okay, that's going to be there. So I want to do a couple of things. One is in the Dharma, they talk about using skillful means. And I'm going to write these on the board just so that. So, and I'm going to rephrase these in my own language. And the first part of skillful means is take your hand off the stove. And what I mean by this is if you've got your hand on the stove and it's hot, take your hand off. And the Dharma term for this is you guard the sense doors. If you've got something going on that there's part of us, it's kind of the imp of the perverse that keeps wanting to move back into what's painful, take your hand, that's putting your hand back on the stove where you wallow in it or keep touching it in some way. Keep thinking if I touch it enough, I'll feel better. But the fact is every time you put your hand back on the stove, it just hurts again, right? I mean, it's kind of like many of us are traumatized by the news these days. It's difficult. And we react by turning on the news all the time. Taking your hand off the stove means, you know what? Getting triggered by this does not help. Or if you're in a relationship breakup, thinking about that last, all the things that went wrong, doesn't help. It doesn't help you move on. It doesn't help you find clarity. So take your hand off the stove. Or guard the fence door. And the second thing is to move toward it. hold it. And I want to say a couple things about this is, I don't want to skip steps here. Okay. Is that resistance to things, and I'm sure you've heard this, produces persistence. That it turns out what is so painful about these emotions is when we resist them, we do not, any painful emotion, actually all it is it's information from the beyond. It's information about something in life that you need to see. When you look at it on its lowest level, if you weren't emotionally caught up in it. And when we resist it, it can't speak to us, frankly. It can't give us the information, and most importantly, it can't digest. It remains frozen in place. And when we can just be with it, we can not only eventually understand whatever it's telling us, but it can digest, because what it is made of is just your own life force. It's made of just the energy from your heart, and when you're with it and it can digest, that energy is freed up and it doesn't become a permanent, like, wound. So we need to stay present with it. And the other thing, so part of it is we stay present with it because we don't want it to last forever. We don't want it to make a permanent dent on us. We don't want it to make a permanent wound on us. But secondly, it turns out that the painfulness of it isn't actually the emotion itself. It's our distance from it. It is our resistance to it. So the other reason we move toward it is because this is pain resolving. And what I mean by that is, it in practice, and this is deep practice, as you move toward something that's unpleasant and you close the distance between you and it, and by distance you could also use the word resistance, and you become really, really close to it. When you get close up, it's just an intense vibration of energy. When it's so close, you can't even name it anymore. It turns out it's just energy. It isn't even unpleasant at that point. When you're close enough, you can say to it, you can be here forever. It's okay. It's kind of like if you saw a picture and you can see it out here, but as it gets really close, you stop seeing the picture. It's so close, all you feel is maybe the color of it. So when we move close to something, the story around it, the image around it, the name around it begins to dissolve, and all we just feel is the raw sensation of it. And in holding and polishing, when we move into the body, you're all familiar with that instruction, to feel it as an energy in the body. We move it closer than the mind. The mind is where the story, the belief, the injustice of it all exists, so we move closer than that. And it turns out the pain is at the mind level. It's not at the closer level. Does that make sense to you? And the corollary of this is we can say, well, if I move so close, what if it destroys me? What if this just takes me over and this kills me in some way? And the fact is that any object that comes up is a conditioned object. It has three characteristics. It's impermanent. There's no object that's going to make or break your life. And there's really no self in it. It's just an energy that's come in. It is going to go at some point. Think about the worst tragedy you've had. At some point, it's over. You're still there. Do you know what I mean by that? I mean, I think of times where I was just completely knocked off base. I look at it now, and what I trust is that was a conditioned object. It has passed. I'm still here. So you are bigger. The force of your being is bigger than anything that could possibly happen in life. And to find that, trust that center. So I want to offer 6 principles here of taking care of big things that don't just go away in a practice period or two. And even if you can remember 1 or 2 of them, I'm hoping they will be helpful to you. So the first one is It's take care of business. And this means skillful action in Dharma speak. I'm paraphrasing everything so it'll be more direct. You know, if you're in a situation and there's an action you need to take, take that action. If there's a phone call you need to make, if there's an uncomfortable conversation you need to have, if there's more information you need or you need follow-up medical care or whatever it is, take care of business. Make sure that you are walking yourself through what needs to be done no matter how you feel. So, and the second thing is as the Rumi poem goes, is invited in as an honored guest. So, you know, things like sadness, loss, anxiety, or fear, they're going to come in with this reaction of not wanting them to be there. That's the ego's way of trying to push anything unpleasant away. So it's not that you need, and so when I say invited in, you don't need to pretend that that reaction isn't there. And you don't need to judge yourself that that reaction is there. It's part of being a human being. So you don't have to go, oh my gosh, I shouldn't be feeling this, or I wish this aversion would go away. But your mindfulness is just noting, if you have aversion there, it's just noticing here it is. And when you notice it, it gives you more opportunity to not follow its outflow, which were all the things we just talked about a minute ago with the mind figuring it out or procrastinating or numbing out or slamming doors or whatever else we do, just by noticing it's there. So we notice this place in us that doesn't want to feel it. And we soften that. We allow it to soften. So part of honor is not only inviting the emotion in, but invite the aversion in too. You are bigger than it. You can hold it. Invite it in and say, have a seat. Welcome. So, you know, to know that this is going to be here as long as it's here until it's not here anymore. And it's going to be hard. This is rough. So with kindness to yourself, just acknowledge that it's there. Invite it in as an honored guest. So, in the Dharma, it talks about not following the outflow of aversion. It doesn't say we fix it, we deep six it, we defend against it, we blame it. In the Dharma, it says we abandon the moving away from it. So we notice it's there. We don't have to fix it. We don't have to figure it out. All the places in us that want to run away, that want to be averse, that want to push away, we don't have to fix any of those things. We don't have to have them not be present. We just abandon them, meaning there they are, but I'm not going to follow the outflow. There's a lot more space when we do that, rather than getting down on ourselves that we're feeling all of the things that we feel as human beings. So the third part of it is don't follow your judgment. You know, it's so easy to, in ourselves, go, golly, I've been meditating for 10 years. Why can't I get over this angry feeling? Right? Self-judgment or the other judgment. And if somebody else has done something really terrible to us, it's like, they shouldn't have done that. Why did they do that? Same coin, two sides of the same coin. Don't follow judgment. There's a Buddhist teaching called the teaching of conceit, which is a teaching that anyone or anything could be different than how it is. We don't choose our reactions to things. They just come up. We don't choose our conditioning. It's just what we've got, not only for us, but for those around us who sometimes do thoughtless or unskillful things, just as we do thoughtless and unskillful things. Not to judge it, it's just what's present. You know, it's so easy to judge somebody else and to think, oh, they should have or I should have, but the fact is, that karma is a very exacting law and it makes no exceptions. Things flow from conditions. You know, there's this teaching, because this is true, that's true. Everything is connected. Everything comes from everything else. You can't carve one piece out of that because it's unpleasant for you and go, this is my exception. I don't want this to be true. It's, karma does not allow those exceptions. Life is just what it is. So judgment, just abandoning your judgment, not following it, is really helpful. It gives you a lot of inner space to just go, yep, here I am. Here I am. So, did I miss something here? Okay. So, another principle that's been really helpful for me when I've been in big things is to then look at yourself with kindness. When you've got something, you know it's going to be around for a while. Something big has happened, and you know it's going to be days, weeks, or maybe months while you work through it. Plan on, take care, plan around it. This is going to be hard. I'm going to be a quart low. This takes a lot of processing. What can I offer myself? Maybe you need to offer yourself, get outside for a walk every day. Maybe you offer yourself to pay extra attention to how well you eat. Maybe you pay attention, this is big for me, to make sure I've got a couple times a week that I get together with a trusted friend. Maybe it's making sure you've got time every day that you can just be by yourself, even if it's just 10 minutes drinking tea and looking out the window, just time to process. But plan a self-care around it. Plan around it. Okay, this is, I mean, like you would a party. This is going to be, this party's going to be around for a while. What can I do to make it as, you know, to make it as smooth as possible? What can I do for myself? Can you see underlying all these things? It's just acceptance. It's all this is moving towards, here it is. Here I am in this situation. How can I move toward it and embrace it? And the next one, and this is really hard for me, is patience. You know, these emotional turmoils have an organic way of processing. Just like if you had a wound on your, if you cut your arm, you can't make it heal in 3 days. It takes as long as it takes. So patience is just understanding that it's a process and giving yourself time and space around it. Yeah, it will heal. This will pass, but I can't change it. I can't change the pace of it. And the last one that moves with that one is trust in this process. When I was in high school, I was at a dance, and one of the parent chaperones, I think I was kind of a wallflower. Why would I be talking to an adult chaperone at a high school dance? Anyways, I'm probably by the wall, and this guy probably had mercy on me and came over, and he started talking to me. And he said something that was very profound. He said, when you're in times of crisis, he said, we tend to believe what we tend to doubt our values. We tend to doubt the things that we normally take as truths in our life. He said, when you're in trouble, he said, remember to doubt your doubts, not your beliefs. And that was really, that has been a signpost to me my whole life. In other words, when I'm in trouble with a relationship or a loss or something that's really upended me, instead of going, oh my gosh, I've never had a successful relationship, or my family has always been dysfunctional, or whatever, that's doubting your doubts, the things that don't go right in our lives. Think about, what are my beliefs? I believe in my family, I mean my nuclear family, because they show up for me. They have shown up for me when I've been in trouble. I believe in these teachings, which have supported me in so many ways. I believe in my own inner clarity. I know it's there even if I'm tossed and turned. I believe in the present moment. I believe that in the present moment, there's nothing I can't handle. It's only when the mind begins to project into the future or relive the past that things become overwhelming. So it's really important to figure out what your baseline beliefs are and doubt your doubts. Like, you know, oh my gosh, this is the 10th time this relationship has gone off track. So doubt your doubts, not your beliefs. So all of these are, I would call them dharma syntonic. They agree with the principles of the dharma, which is to always be in the moment and move toward things. Rupert Spira had one of the things he said recently that hit me is he said, happiness is when we finally resolve our fight with reality. You know, even when things are hard, it's just, here we are. And, you know, we are a sangha that we offer safety and wisdom to each other, and we offer that to ourselves too through this practice. It's, don't underestimate it. And I'd like to close from a saying from the Dhammapada that I've always loved. And it says, sit in the world, which is sit in all the ego-syntonic things, the aversion, the moving away from, the avoiding. Sit in the world, sit in darkness. Sit in meditation, which is the opposite, coming back home to the moment, to ourselves. Sit in meditation, sit in light. Choose your seat. Let wisdom grow. So I encourage you to choose your seat.